I think how it did Portland then, working with the Charles Seymour Company of San Francisco, engineers building power plants and things of that kind. And we were working on the Portland Gas and Electric Company plant in Portland in 1918. Then got through with that and came to Seattle to work on the Lake Union plant, which was also another Charles Seymour building. And I didn't get here, as I recall it, till about the end of March. The strike that you're interested in started in February 1919 and was caused by the rejection by the labor movement of the Macy Award. I imagine you've gone through that. And it got to be quite a controversial thing between the labor unions themselves, the individual unions. See, we've got to bear in mind that 1919, the top production in the shipyards was phasing out of existence because the war had ended, as I recall it, on November the 11th, 1918. And as a consequence, the government had cut back on their financing of the shipyards, the building of boats, and the industry itself is on the downgrade. And I think if I had been here at that time, I would certainly have been against a general strike for those kind of conditions. But, of course, it only lasted, I believe, 3 days. Is that right?
Five, I think.
5 days? I didn't think it lasted that long. I thought it was 3 days that it lasted. It started on the 8th of February, I believe, and ended on the 11th, as I recall.
It's the 6th of the 11th.
I know that most of the organizations here, even the building trades organizations, who normally are pretty conservative, but at that particular time, most of their members were working in the shipyards. They had what they call I believe they call it the Metal Trades Division at that time. And in my own particular union, which was the Plumbers and Steam Fitters, the steam fitters only then, they've amalgamated since that time. I think we probably had 1/10 or maybe 1/20 of our members at work in the building trades, the rest of them all in the shipyards. I worked in the shipyards myself for a while.
What were you doing there?
I was a steam fitter, pipe fitter. I was what they called a layout man. I went to work with an old fella by the name of Bill Shaw. He had a little plumbing repair shop on the waterfront. And he got picked up to run the pipe shop down at the Ames Shipyard. The general manager was a fellow, as I recall it, by the name of Ted Jones, who was a prominent football hero out of Yale University, T.A.D. Jones. And he did organize a pretty good shipyard. And I was layout man for Shaw. Used to go around and lay out all of the holes for the flanges and the bulkheads where the pipes went through and all that kind of stuff. And then the rest of the pipe fitters would come along and figure out the kind of bends they had to make to put into the tube between the two flanges.
So you were a skilled and especially skilled worker.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I graduated as a fully fledged steam fitter in 1914.
graduated from where?
From Portland. From Portland. Previous to that, though, I had been all over the Pacific Coast and quite a bit back east, too, as a helper. We had helpers those days, but they're done away with now. They're what we call apprentices now, and there's only one for so many. Those days, we had one helper for every journeyman. And the helpers were pretty much in demand all up and down the coast. A good helper, because a lot of the mechanics that probably weren't up to top efficiency depended upon the helper to get them out of a bad spot once in a while. So I worked in San Francisco when I had a helper local there. That was, I believe, in 1911. Went on down to Los Angeles, but I couldn't get a job in Los Angeles. I didn't realize the fact it was so warm down there they didn't put in steam heating. Oh, but I'd have known now, I'd have made some money down there, because on the corner of 7th and Olive, I think it was, 7th and Olive, a fellow by the name of Jack Rabbit had a pool hall, and that's where the plumbers and steam fitters hung out. Those days, the plumbers, you know, carried a carpet bag with all their tools in it, and those carpet bags were all slung under the pool table. A fellow got a job, he'd come in and pick up his carpet bag and start go to work. Because they don't do that anymore, because the employer supplies all the tools now. But if I could have just seen ahead, you know, all of that vacant property around Los Angeles, my goodness gracious. And this little town of Burbank was just starting then, too, 1911. Just imagine the opportunity the fellow had would be just see ahead. Hindsight is always better than foresight.
So then you came back up and were working in Portland by the time the strike started, working as a journeyman in Portland?
Well, in 1914, there was a kind of a depression. Hardly anybody was working in the building trade. It was awful tough. And I went to Everett, a little town up here, Everett. I did a job there for the heating in a small hotel. Went to work for a fellow by the name of Fred Thompson. I worked up there, I don't know, 6 or 8 months. There was nothing coming up, and I stayed around there, went broke, and then took a freight over to Eastern Washington, looking for a job around Wenatchee or wherever I could find it. But there was nothing doing, so I went to work for a sheet metal firm there, right above Wenatchee, and I worked there for a couple of years as a helper, a sheet metal worker's helper. Well, then, pretty soon the war came on, 1918, and I decided I should come back and see what I could do to help out. So I came back to Seattle and got turned down by the war board. I was underweight and I was having eye trouble, so they turned me down and told me to go to work in the shipyard, which I did. And I worked there, but oh boy, the noise of those rivets, you know, everything was riveted then, you know. And I remember the first morning that I went to work, I was down in the double bottom, and the plates weren't laid yet on top, and they were riveted in the shell. And of course, you probably know that when they riveted, the fella had an air furnace, you know, to heat the rivets. He picked them up and he'd throw them. The fella at the shell of the of the ship would catch them in a bucket, and they'd rivet them up. Well, before they did that, there was another fellow who was taking bolts out of the plate that was holding them together for the rivets, and he let one of those bolts drop, and the damn thing came down and hit me right on the head. First day I was there, hit me right on the head here, and opened up a big gash. So they took me back into the hospital unit there and fixed it all up. And that, I don't know, that kind of made me feel kind of a little bit put out that shit does. But that continual riveting and banging in those boats is just absolutely was impossible to put up with for me. I couldn't stand it. But I worked there I went to work there, as I recall, at 17. First part of 17, I worked there for near a year. I finally told Shaw, I said, I've got to get out of here, I can't stand it. What are you going to do? I said, well, Shaw Seymour wants me to go to work down in Portland on one of their power plants. So I think that's what I'll do. Have you got a clearance? I said, no, I haven't, but I tried to join the war, but they wouldn't take me, so I don't think there's any danger there. So I went on down to Portland and worked down there until the first part of 1919. When I got back here, the strike was all over.
Down in Portland, did you hear about the strike?
No, I don't recall hearing about the strike down there. We were so busy down there trying to complete this plant for the Portland Gas and Electric Company that we didn't hear too much down there about it.
How about when you got back to Seattle?
Oh yeah, then it was all the rage then, of course. And
what were people saying about it?
They were saying it was a mistake, most of them.
Is it working people were saying that? Or
well,
business
people? They kind of divided on it. Some of them took the position that it was a fine thing to do because it did show solidarity amongst the labor people. And others would take the position, well, it's all right to have solidarity, but after all, it's final results that count. It's going to be successful. Are you going to win? That's what counts as far as the labor movement is concerned. So there was quite a divided opinion amongst a lot of the labor people themselves.
Did they feel they had lost the strike, or?
I think that was a question. That question is pretty hard to answer because of this. The shipyard workers who went on the strike say they won. They figure they won because of the solidarity that was put out by the labor movement. Actually, they lost because the Macy Award was not changed. They had to accept it. And not only that, but because of the downgrading, not the downgrading, but the downward tendency of shipbuilding here, people were getting out of work. And there wasn't the money coming in from the government to keep it going. So, naturally, the movement was weakened to that extent, and they couldn't put up much opposition to keep it going.
So, before the tape was on, you said that it was, I'm not sure whether I have this right, but you said that you felt it was a bad time to have a general strike? Or how did you feel about the general strike? Would you have supported it if you had been in Seattle?
No, I think if I was in Seattle that particular time, I would very strongly advise against it.
Because of what was happening in the shipyards anyway?
Yeah, because the shipyards were on the way out, men were being unemployed, being out of jobs, and to me it was a very poor time to call it a general strike.
How did you feel about the idea of a general strike? not the timing, but just the idea of a general strike?
I think in those days, probably, a general strike sometimes had to be demonstrated in order to show that the labor movement did have some strength. Nowadays, you don't need that. I think practically every international labor union at the present time is strong enough to demand its own particular revisions of what they want. The Teamsters Union, for instance, when they go up, they can tie up just about all of our transportation if they want to. They can tie up the deliveries to our grocery stores, and wherever deliveries are being made. And people can't, business can't exist without that kind of transportation.
Can you imagine a general strike happening today?
What?
Can you imagine a general strike happening today?
No, I can't. Not in the first place, I don't think they would get the international unions to agree to a general strike. I don't think the international unions would look at it favorably because of the fact that each one considers himself autonomous, and they also figure that they're strong enough to protect their own interests. So I don't think a general strike would be necessary right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another factor enters into this, which you probably thought of it too, but business going into such big tie-ups like the ATT, ITT, taking in all kinds of various industries, building big monopolies of empires, they're laying themselves into, to me, they're laying themselves into a very dangerous position. Because if they have a strike in one particular industry that they control, and they can't get any place, and they call upon the rest of the people working for that group, regardless of what industry, it might be bakers, it might be a dozen other things. To call all of those people out, it will cripple that industry. It would cripple that monopoly company. They're, to me, that's a very dangerous situation for them to put themselves in, but they're all doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they can control prices that way by getting rid of the smaller people, smaller fellows, but it's awfully dangerous.
At the time of the strike, what was your political leanings? Were you a conservative in the trade union, or were you a radical in the movement?
Oh no, I was very conservative.
What did that mean at that time, being a conservative?
Well, I think probably, see, I was business manager of our Steamfitters Union from 1925 till 1935. In the meantime, held every other position in it, I guess, and I was also vice president of the State Federation of Labor for 19 years. And I found out that if a person uses his head to negotiate with the employers on a sensible business-like arrangement, you're going to get further ahead than if you tangle with them and fight every issue that comes along. I found out that sometimes I had to back down a little bit from the position that I took. But I always felt it was justified, because if the employer certainly doesn't make money out of his particular operation, he certainly can't pay the people that I'm representing to pay them a decent wage. And that's the way that I negotiated.
So you must have known, being vice president and also being a business agent, you must have known a lot of the people who took who played big parts in the strike, like Jimmy Duncan.
Yeah, I knew Jimmy Duncan pretty well. Jimmy, God rest his soul, he's dead now, of course. Little Englishman came here on a boat, you know, many, many years ago. And Jimmy was a little bit radical in his opinions, always managing to be on the winning side, if you could make it that way. But a lot of people respected him. He was on the school board here for a good many years, and he was pretty well respected.
Do you remember Harry Ault, who...
Who?
Harry Ault, the editor
Harry
of the Union Record?
Harry, yeah. Harry was a manager of the Union Record. Later on, he went to Tacoma to work for the Internal Revenue Service.
Hmm.
Yeah, his sister was a secretary for one of the unions here. And I can't recall the union, but I knew Harry pretty well. And by the way, this fellow that was the right hand of Senator Magnuson, Saul Hass, was working for Harry Ault, you know, was one of the prime managers of the Union Record at that time.
Is he still around?
Saul Hass? I wonder if Saul died. I'm not too sure. H-A-A-S. Saul Hass.
Would he be in Seattle?
Yeah, he was in Seattle, and he was quite prominent in Senator Magnuson, and I believe that they owned some radio stations together. One in Yakima, I believe, and I think they had an interest in KIRO here for a while. I'm not bothered about that, but that's in my memory that they did.
How about Anna Louise Strong? Do you remember her?
Yeah. She was in the Central Labor Council here for a while. And a pretty smart woman. Pretty well informed. She was something like Jimmy Duncan. She was a little bit radical in her ideas. She would make a good communist, which I guess she eventually became a communist by going to Russia. But she was all for the working people. And she sacrificed a lot, I believe, to go out and do it, too. She was a very intelligent woman. But around here, in those days, she didn't get very far, actually. People weren't that radical-minded in Seattle. They were more conservative in their approach to obtaining any gains for labor.
Even though they did put on a general strike where they ran the city.
Who?
The laboring people in Seattle. That seemed at the time, I mean, it was people like Ole Hansen were saying that it was almost a revolution.
Well, of course, early, he declared martial law, but that didn't get him very far either.
You knew him?
Oh, yes. I remember when he was mayor and when he sold the privately owned streetcar system to the city. And then shortly afterwards, he and Tom... got your right hand, I think he was... chief engineer at that time. They went down to, and started that San Clemente in California. I guess made some money out of it too. Yeah.
Did at the time around the strike, did you know members of the IWW?
No, I didn't. I didn't get to meet those kind of people very much, actually.
They weren't down in the shipyards? They mostly out in the lumber camps?
No, they were mostly up around Everett in the lumber camps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was working in Everett, though, when that boat came up there.
You were?
Yeah. Well, what year was that, about?
16, I think.
16 or 17, along in there. Yeah. Yeah. I was in everything.
What was that like? I mean, do you remember people talking
about
it? You
know, I missed the boat itself coming in, because I was working on the job, you see, and I went down after they left, and there were several policemen on the dock, and they were shooting at pieces of wood in the water, things like that, you know. But there was no trouble there. Then it was all gone.
Did you know beforehand that there was going to be that sort of... Did any of the workers know?
Well, see, I was working in Everett then on that Strand Hotel, and I didn't know a thing about it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything else that I can tell you about that general strike. You probably know more about it right now than I do after your investigating and so on.
But I don't know what the feeling was like at the time.
No, it was pretty much split. There was quite a division of opinion on it.
Uh-huh.
I think that was exemplified by the fact that after the third or fourth or fifth day, whatever it was, fine, they all went back to work.
Uh-huh.
So there must have been quite a difference of opinion.
Right. Do you think it was worth it for them, or was it a bad mistake as it all turned out? Do you think it, for instance, did that push the shipyard owners into laying off people sooner, or did it not affect that?
I think that the general strike, it was an emotional thing in the first place. The shipyard people themselves, the workers, were incensed at the fact that the government would not change the Macy Award, which is understandable with the market going out like it did. But they didn't seem to, the leaders didn't seem to realize that fact, that they were on a declining market. I think if they'd had some good business experience somewhere in the union that could have pointed those things out to them, that they would have hesitated a little bit more before they called the general strike.
Who were the leaders of that?
I can't recall.
I mean, what sorts of people were they? Union people?
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course, everything those days was in a turmoil, you know. The Boilermakers, they were in a building downtown. Which reminds me, the fellow that came to work in my place, the steam fitters, afterwards, he says, you know, the Boilermakers, they were so busy taking in new members in the Collins building, the old Collins building. They were so busy taking in new members, they didn't have drawers enough to put the money in. They got apple boxes to throw the money in on the floor to hold them from these new applicants to go to work in the shipyards. With those conditions, you know, that's temporary rush. Why? I don't think people use their heads too well.
The Boilermakers was the large union in Seattle.
Oh, I would say probably the Boilermakers had the majority of workers in the shipyards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tremendously big organization at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall how many members they had, but they had many thousands.
One last thing I wanted to ask you was, when you came back from Portland and people were talking about the strike, did they see it as some... historically significant event? Was it different than other strikes? Was there any sort of pride that they had run the city for a couple days? Or was it just a strike that had happened like other strikes were bigger?
Well, God, I didn't meet those people very much. But
I mean, normal, just everyday workers, how did they feel about the fact that workers had run the city?
I think that the average worker, anyone, the group that I was with, they were kind of glad the thing was over. Most of them didn't want it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the people that I got in contact with in the building trades, they didn't want it in the first place because they didn't think it was a good time to go on strike. So,
they had never thought, though, that it was... a semi-revolutionary activity that they were doing.
No, they thought
anyone who thought that?
No, I think that the people that run the strike thought they were justified. I don't think it was a communist movement or anything of that kind. I think it was that the people that were in charge of it figured that it was justified, that they were entitled to more money. The price of things were going up at that time, and that was their position. But I think they should have looked at the other end of it. But there wasn't much chance for them to win with the kind of a market that was coming up in the shipbuilding industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing that happened afterwards was that the shipyards that did keep running practically went non-union.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I know that, let's see, here in 80, Ames that I worked for, there was Ducey, and then there was another shipyard that built wooden boats. What the heck, I can't, there were two names, I can't think of their names. This is 60 years ago, you know. My memory's not quite that good all the time.
It's pretty amazing so far.
But I noticed that wooden shipyard where I am.
How much did the Skinner and Eddie, how many people did they lay off? Were they half as big after, by 1920? How many boats were they putting out? Do you have any idea?
As I recall it, they finished the contract that they had with the government. And that just about closed up the ship.
And did it stop?
Well, they had some private contracts, I suppose, but they really shut down, you know. There was hardly anything going anymore. After the war was over, the thing gradually decreased and decreased. Finally came to practically a stop. Of course, it never did fully stop, because still got shipyards here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Still building boats, repairing boats, and so on.
How was it that that all the other unions decided to support the Middle Trades Council and go out in the sympathy general strike? Why did they decide to do that?
Well, I think because most of the unions had a lot of their members working in the shipyards at that time, regardless of the union. But it had to be Pikefitters Union, Plumbers Union, they all had people working in the shipyard, carpenters, electricians, you know, the stable conservative union. Oh, I had a lot of people working on
So that's why the conservative union did something as radical as general strike.
Well, their membership were working there, and they went along with the opposition to the Massey Award.
Mm-hmm. How about the other unions, though, like, say, the streetcars or the telephone operators, people like that? What was the atmosphere like that they decided to join in also?
Well, I never got into talking with those kind of people, telephone people. I wouldn't think they'd be very much interested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were a company deal at that time, pretty much, and they would go along with company policy,
mm-hmm.
I imagine. But that would be out of my sphere, because my work was always on buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had worked on telephone buildings, but there wasn't any operators in them then.
Well, that's all my questions.
Well, if it's been of any help to you, I'm glad.
As a matter of fact,
but the people who are just a way to fill up the empty spaces inside. Oh, dancing fools, spinning faster and faster. You know what you're after.